Today is the feast of the body and blood of Christ. And I've decided to make the goal of my talk to be increased respect for the human body. Now, by relating it to the body of Christ. Now, please understand, I use the word respect in a very different way, because ever since I did the simple etymology of the word respect, the word origin of the word respect, it has sort of haunted me. Seems such a simple word, but it has haunted me in the sense of the profound meaning that it has, especially for a Christian. Allow me to explain. The word respect is has a very simple origin. Everybody pretty much knows that any time you put R-E in front of anything, it means do it again. Right? Reclean your room, restock, rewrite, anything re. But then the word continues, spec, or spect. And spect is a variant of to look or to see. And that's why we have words like spectacles or glasses. We call them glasses, but in England they call them spectacles, or a spectacle is something to be seen. So to respect really means look again. Now, at first you may ask yourself, why? You saw in the first time. Yeah, but you really did not really see. Because when we look at the world and at each other at first sight, what we're getting is the raw symbols, and they're hitting us at our likes and dislikes. For example, you see a piece of art. You just see it. I like it. I don't like it. You see a person, and I'm attracted to them. I'm not attracted to them. You see anything, and you always see it first through your own filter that is sort of, oh yes or oh no. Okay? But how many times, though, hasn't it happened to you that when you look again, what you're actually doing is looking through a different filter, a totally different filter? So, for example, if you go to an art museum and you see a painting that you don't like, that's your first reaction. But then you read about it, and all of a sudden, you respect. You look at that painting differently, because now the filter has changed, and you're not looking at it through the superficial likes and dislikes that you have. You're looking at it through a much deeper understanding of the work. Or with people. How many of us haven't had people that the first time when you meet them, you kind of go, ugh, you know. But then when you talk to them and you find out they're actually pretty decent, you know, and pretty nice. And you change. You grow in respect. A Christian, I think that word should be central to a Christian vocabulary. It's normal to see the world through the raw emotions and desires that we have. That's normal. But it should also be very close to just second nature for the Christian to go into respect mode. And what would respect mode be? Respect mode would be to say, okay, let me look at it again from God's point of view to the best of my ability. Let me look at this from God's point of view. And you're going to see that things change. Now, the reason I'm talking about that than this on the Feast of the Body and Blood of Christ is because I'd like to start with just the body. The body. And I'm going to end up of Christ later on. But the body, let me put the blood aside for a moment. When I say our, I'm talking about humanity. How does humanity in different cultures and religions approach the body? In many cultures and religions, for example, let me take just a couple of religions, most contrasting religions. In other words, I'm not going to take Judaism and Christianity. They're just too close. But let me take some contrasting cultures and religion. Secularism, then Islam, Buddhism, Hinduism, and Christianity. Look at, for example, Buddhism, Hinduism. In Buddhism, Hinduism, the body is literally something that is stuck to you. A lot of people fancy this whole notion of reincarnation. And I always have to smile when I hear people, because everybody says that when in the past life I used to be a queen or a king, nobody was some schmuck that cleaned up the streets, you know? You were always somebody important, which says you have a high regard for yourself. But the whole thing is, well, from a Christian point of view, it's total nonsense. But a Hindu and a Buddhist understands reincarnation as, the body is stuck to you. So imagine you take your hand and put it in water, and then you put it down on a pan of flour, and the flour sticks to your hand, right? That's the way that what has happened in their understanding is that a little piece of God, which is what you are, you're a little piece of God, has sort of broken away and got contaminated with matter. And so the whole point of salvation for Hindus and Buddhists is for you to become so detached from the body that over the period of a lifetime, if you reach nirvana, or several lifetimes, because the more attached to your body, the lower you will become reincarnate. Then what's supposed to happen is you are supposed to get rid of the body, so that when you die, you will join God, but as a spirit. The body is a sort of necessary burden. Okay? It's a necessary burden. You are part of God. One of my favorite examples is imagine if you have an eyedropper, okay? And you take an eyedropper and you fill it with water, And then you squeeze that eyedropper, and you see at the bottom of the eyedropper a little drop starting to form. Now, if I ask you, does that drop exist? You say, of course, I can see it. And if I keep on squeezing and the drop falls into the ocean, I ask you now the same question. Does that drop exist? And the answer is, I don't know. But it doesn't exist as a drop. It may exist as some molecules, but it's part of the ocean. That's you. In Hinduism and Buddhism, that's you. You don't, the very fact that you think you exist as an individual is because matter is stuck to a little piece of God. So notice the understanding of the body. It's kind of a necessary burden, or even a necessary, not even a necessary, just a conditional evil. Not bad, bad, but stuck. Look at, for example, Islam. In Islam, a little closer to Judaism, God made us. But there's a sort of tremendous embarrassment about the body, especially the female body. And there's not a lot of course, the word Islam means submit. But there is an exaggeration on, especially the female body. I was reading a couple of days ago, it just blew my mind. A man was arrested somewhere in the Middle East because his wife had given birth, and the man shot the doctor because the doctor had seen his wife naked. And so it's this exaggerated notion of the body as something wrong, something that has to be kept hidden. And in and of itself, you see the problem. It's almost an obsession. So in secularism, for example, our secularism in which we live is as much a religion as anything else. We understand the body as whatever. You know, that's the idea these days of morality or any kind of value to anything is called whatever. It doesn't really matter. We treat body as if it's interchangeable. You know, you were born male. It's which gender do you identify? Well, it's kind of like putty. We can make whatever we want out of the body. And then you have porn. And on porn, well, the body's just for having fun, having a pleasure. And so we use the body without much respect. We use the body as if it was just a plaything of how we feel or our desires at any given time. So you see, just in those three, how different people take the body. Now let's look at Christianity. Because for Christians, the body is taken with a lot of respect. We don't deny the immediate. Look, the immediate, when you see a body, a human body, there can be both a reaction of attraction, or if you see a guy, fat like guy like me in a Speedo, revulsion. Okay? Attract or repel. But for a Christian, we look at it through God's eyes. The very first thing that we noticed is that when God in Genesis builds human beings as flesh and blood, he says, That is good. That is good. So the very first thing that a Christian needs to understand is that the human body is good. It is created to be the way it is. Now, understand, we live in a state of what the church calls original sin. Original sin is not something you did wrong. Original sin is kind of like your internal programming is scrambled. And so you don't see yourself correctly. Do you remember when Adam and Eve eat of the tree of knowledge of good and evil? What is the very first thing that they notice? They're naked. Now, one of my favorite moments in the whole Bible is when God is pictured, because it's a story, God is pictured walking in the Garden of Eden, and God says, "Adam, where are you?" And Adam says, "I heard you walking in the garden, and I was naked, and so I hid." Now, the next sentence is, to me, one of the most awesome sentences. God says, "Who told you you were naked?" Now, think about that. If you're in the shower and you're naked, does anybody need to tell you you're naked? No. Why would God have to say that? Because the concept of nakedness had not dawned on the human mind. It had not dawned on the human mind. And so the very first thing is that what's called original innocence is removed from the character of humankind. And so we begin to see that part of being a Christian is respect. In other words, look at the fact that even though we are still affected by original sin and our vision is all screwed up, we still look at the human body, even in its naked form, with beauty and respect. That is part of our understanding. Now, people will say, "Well, how can you see a naked body and look at it with respect?" Because what Jesus is saying is to not look at a human body through the eyes of, sometimes it's called lust, meaning I want to use you sexually for something. That's the wrong way to look at it. That's looking at it through the corrupted eye. It's not respecting that human body. I always tell teenagers that, look, when I go to Galveston and I like to walk around the beach sometimes and I see a beautiful woman walk across in a bikini, I can guarantee you I am not looking at the sky. Okay? That woman is beautiful. I don't know if she should be showing that much, but she is beautiful. Now, at that moment, I have a choice. I can not respect by looking at her through my desires, or I can say, "Beautiful, Lord, my hormones are firing off like normal, but at the same time, help me to respect her by looking at her as your daughter. Beautiful, but as your daughter." And so the very first thing in Christianity is that we understand the body to be a positive thing, a part of you. And as a matter of fact, when Jesus rises from the dead, Jesus makes it a point to go up to his disciples and say, "Touch me. Touch me so that you see that I have a body. Do you have anything to eat? Ghosts don't eat." Okay? So now there is the understanding that the body of Jesus has been transformed. It has qualities. He can enter rooms, seems to be able to enter rooms without, with the doors being locked, and seems to be a bit unrecognizable because it's, the church calls it a glorified body. But it is still a positive body. And even with each other, think about it. The body is a sign of you. How do I know you are present? I don't see the inner you. I see your body. Now, I can be talking to you on the phone, and I would ask, are you present to another person when you're talking on the phone? Part of that body is coming through the line, the sound, but you're not present. To be present, the body has to be present. Then you know the person is there, because the body carries the person and communicates the person. That's why when we see people that we love and we haven't seen them for a long time, what do? A hug. What is a hug? Take your body and put it close to mine. That's what we do. I mean, think about it. We hold each other close. And even when you make love to somebody, what's happening? Two naked bodies. But what's happening? Communication. That's the way God built us. When bodies are close to each other, and especially in sexual intercourse, what happens is literally copies of yourselves, your DNA in the egg and the sperm, are united. You know why the church says that sex outside of marriage is wrong? Because it's a lie. It's a lie. Your body is saying something. I am one with you. I am entering into you. You are entering into me. But it's a lie. You're not one at all. The two shall become one. And that's a lie. And so what is it? A lack of respect. A lack of respect, meaning you're not looking at your body through the eyes of a Christian. You're looking at your body as a secular person would look at it. And so let me start closing this, because it's only going to take me 20 minutes to close it. But the whole point of the homily is to land on, what does it mean to celebrate the body and blood of Christ? Well, if you take everything we've talked about, the fact that the body is the presence. And in the ancient world, the blood, and even today, the blood is considered the life. When we say a person went so far as to shed his blood. And in this weekend, on Memorial Day, we think about those of our brothers and sisters who shed their blood for a specific significance. And it was done out of love, and gave themselves up. And here you enter into a place where Jesus told us to do something very strange. He told us to gather, and when he did this the first time, now I want you to imagine you being there the very first time. And this guy that you've been friends with takes a piece of bread and says, eat this. This is my body. Takes the cup, drink this. This is my blood. I don't know about you, but it would scare the bejeebies out of me. Because when you respect, at first you say, hey, what everybody else says, how can this man give us his body to eat? How can we eat his flesh and drink his blood? What's he saying? Here is me. Here is me. What is your body? How do I know you're present? Because I experience your body. In Jesus being God himself, he takes and he transforms himself. Because when Jesus rises in the ascension, Jesus is no longer bound to be in one place at a time. He's not. That's why I find it interesting that when Mary sees Jesus at the end when he's risen and she thinks he's the gardener, Mary grabs him and he says to her, do not cling to me, for I have not yet ascended to my Father. Meaning, I am still limited by time and space to be in one place at one time. But when I ascend to heaven, Jesus is no longer limited by space and time. And so whenever we celebrate the Eucharist, what we're celebrating is the presence. That's why the Catholic Church takes this so seriously. It's because Jesus is present. It's not a picture. It's not a reminder. Many, many Protestant churches think of it as a reminder. You know, we're reminding of what Jesus did. No, no, no. He is present. He is there. And how do we know? The same way we know everybody. Because I see your body and blood. And that's why this is so profound. So profound in the feast of the body and blood of Christ. Jesus left this to us to remind us that he's not here just in our remembering him. He's not here as a memory. He is not here as a kind of a ghostly presence. Look at what happens to the bread and the wine. It makes its way to your stomach. You can't be closer to you than somebody being inside you. It's an amazing mystery. And so, I hope we grow in respect, that we really look at this. It's really big. And I hope we look at it and stare at it and study it for the rest of our lives.